What do you say, everybody? With Tony Tsoukalos joining us and Trey Anity, I'm Mick Gillespie, and it's time for Monday Night Quarterback, and we're going to talk Alabama sports here, preferably football. On Monday night, like we always do, as you hang out with us, make sure you subscribe. Give us a thumbs up. Subscribe to the Bama Insider YouTube channel. We're the Alabama rival site. We got you covered on recruiting, on Alabama football, and anything else in the world of Crimson Tide athletics. Again, subscribe, thumbs up if you're listening to our podcast right now. It's the same deal, man. 5-star rating on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. That's the way you say Roll Tide to us. All right, let's bring in Trey Anity. Trey, it's been a while since you've been on Monday Night Quarterback. Good to see you again, though. And how you been?
Now, it's great to be back, Nick. Thanks for having me. It really has been a while. I feel like a month at this point since I've been on the show. But, you know, it's great to be back. We've had A-Day since the last time. Alabama fell in the tournament since the last time I was here. We got a lot to talk about tonight. But, you know, this is going to be a really exciting spring into summer here after what we saw in A-Day, everything else, and some big storylines to talk about tonight. How are you doing this Monday?
Look, doing well, and I guess I'm just like everyone else. It was exciting. I went to the game and was part of a big crowd there, and I was glad that, you know, that we were back playing football again, you know, and at the stadium to watch. I mean, it wasn't a full capacity, but, you know, they opened it up for 50,000, and there was, you know, not quite 50,000, but a pretty good crowd there. My friend Lance Taylor from Jocks in Birmingham said, hey, this is the biggest crowd that we've had since COVID. And as far as I know, I mean, it is. It was the biggest crowd since COVID. There was still plenty of room in that stadium for everyone. And then we got to watch football and this kind of new look Alabama offense. But let's just, you know, talk more about the scene itself. You were at the game. It was, you know, the stadium, they've done some renovations to it. It was hard to really tell when you're inside the stadium, but I noticed that outside of the stadium, when you're walking in, you know, there's a new way that the players can come in off of the bus, the Walk of Champions, and they haven't put the new, you know, the 2020 on the Saban statue. You know, you didn't have the 2020 captains out there yet. It's crazy how many championships when you walk down that runway of the stadium that there are. And I'm walking, I'm going, you know, they're going to run out of room. And then I realized that they didn't even put this year's on there yet.
No, I was thinking that last time because they had the 2017 title in the perfect spot. And it's like, they had win another one. They have absolutely no room left to put it there. So I don't know, maybe they'll pave the other sides of it. We'll see what they do. But, you know, this is a championship program that is going to take a little bit of a step in a different direction. I don't want to say a step back this year. We saw it on A-Day. It's like you're talking about a much different look. You know, I've been able to go to maybe 4 or 5 practices so far this season, and a lot of the same, you know, from what we saw on A-Day. This receiving core is super young, but they are just so talented. It was awesome to see them just get after it right away on Saturday.
All of you guys that are watching and commenting on our YouTube channel, we appreciate it. Roll Tide to all you guys as you hang out with us like you do every Monday night. Let's talk about your thoughts on the 8-8 game.
Yeah, I mean, this is an awesome event every year, and it was just so cool to see everybody back. This stadium, you know, gets loud regardless, 50,000 or 100,000, and they were rocking on Saturday. But just to, you know, watch people walk into the stadium, there was one woman I walked past as I was going in. And, you know, she was talking on the phone, talking about how she had never even been to a game before and just how incredible, you know, everything was to be able to go. And, you know, for a lot of people, I think it was weird to be in there and, you know, not have it at full capacity, this, that, whatever. But I think for a lot of fans, it was nice to be able to enjoy a game and, you know, have your space and watch the Crimson Tide for only $5, whatever it was on Saturday. But, you know, when the game started itself, there were some things I was looking out for. Javon Baker was one of them. And, you know, he didn't really show up on Saturday. There was some other things. Keelan Robinson didn't get in the slot like I thought he would. Bryce Young, we'll talk about this here in a minute. Bryce Young, you know, looked okay at times. He looked really good at times. But, you know, there were some moments there where you still scratch your head a little bit and wonder, you know, what are we going to get this season? But overall, I thought it was a good day. Some strides were made. We saw the offensive line, you know, look mediocre, but we saw them flex the muscle too at times. So I think the highlight of the day was probably the receiving core and just seeing the young receivers get after it. Of course, Ajay Hall highlighting that group. But, you know, some really nice things you saw there on the defensive line as well and in that secondary. So overall, good day. A little bit different than I thought it was going to turn out, but 13-10, I think, was the final score. A defensive touchdown and then only one offensive touchdown on the day. A little bit different, but you know, overall, a really good day, I think.
It didn't feel like a normal game day down, you know, out by the stadium, but it was still cool though. You know, like there wasn't anything going on in the, you know, in the quad, you know, no tents or anything like that. But you know, it was still fun. You know, I took my little guy to the game for the first time. He got into the stadium and, you know, it was just neat, you know, kind of being in there and doing the dad thing and then watching the game as well, you know, as much as I did. And then, you know, we got out of there and watched the rest of it on television. Good to see Braxton Barker, our friend Jay Barker's son, get in the game some. I was happy for him. And the memories that it brings back to me is being a student and having some friends that were walk-ons at Alabama and seeing those guys get an opportunity to play, you know, and looking down on the field. And our buddy Ross Gunnels was one of the players, Robert Upchurch. These are two guys that were in the same fraternity as me, and they were, I used to say they were tackling dummies, you know, because they didn't ever get to play, but they were just like, you know, bruised and beaten up playing football at Alabama, but they got the experience, and we all admired that about them. And those A-Day games were players like them that put in so much work, opportunity to get on the field. So that was really cool, too, to see not just the young players and the new guys that are going to be, you know, big time in the future, but also seeing guys who might not get an opportunity to play a whole lot ever, really, you know, wear that uniform and go out on the field and help out. There were some noticeable absences. I mean, we knew Menchie wasn't going to play. Milroe didn't play. You know, we were kind of excited because Nick Saban's talked about him, and they really don't tell you like what's wrong, you know, why guys haven't played. Evan Neal, I think he's the most important guy on the offense. How about me saying that? But I mean, I think he's Alabama's best returning offensive lineman. I mean, he's a difference maker, and you know, he wasn't out there. We knew that. The offensive line kind of got criticized, and they're going to be up against this Bama defense all year. And that's going to be a tough task because the defense just smothered the offense. I mean, there was a few plays that they got fooled. There was the one big play that Bryce rolled out, and I think he threw it to a running back, and no one was covering him. You know, out of that got a big run early in the game, but or catch after the run after the catch. But all in all, I mean, I thought you know that they that it was just a fun event and that the defense was way ahead of the offense.
It was. And, you know, we had an idea that that was going to be the case this season. It's good to see because, you know, Pete Golding has got a lot of criticism since he's been here. But, you know, it was good to see. I think it was really cool to see Jakensi McCrinstry, Kool-Aid, come out and have a big performance, get the interception there. Just a lot of young guys getting people excited. And now on defense, too, you're not having to worry about so many young guys. We saw the, you know, some veterans come back and look good. Christian Harris, we saw, you know, the defensive line's still going to be a little bit young, but it's so much older than it was, which is such a big step. But, you know, overall, it's like Tide fans saying here in the comments, A-Day is pretty much the same every year. You know, everybody will probably look pretty good after fall practice. That's, you know, really when they make that stride from being, you know, new on the team to being somewhat of a, you know, of an experienced player here. So I think we'll see a much different look. Some things certainly tuned up after fall practice, especially at offensive line. But overall, you know, I think A-Day is just so great because it is, you know, a chance for everybody to come together and see their team in the spring. And like you're talking about, for some of those other kids to get in the game, there's so many guys that just grind, that work on this team every single day, that are there just to practice at the end of the day, that don't get the chance to see those guys get in was huge. But, you know, it's not going to be picture perfect every year. I think that's what people want to see. They want Bryce Young to come out and throw 3 touchdowns in this game. They want, you know, every player, all these young receivers to go out and have days like a Jay Hall did. It's just not going to happen. There was one guy I was a little bit disappointed. Mentioned it at the top of the show. Javon Baker, I thought, would have a little bit bigger of a performance. I want to see him continue to make strides because I genuinely believe that he will be wide receiver 1 come fall. But, you know, that's what's so fun about this team. There's so many battles right now. What do you think is, you know, maybe the most heated battle on this team for position-wise? The secondary's kind of crazy, you know, even the running back room at times. Maybe even quarterback. I don't know. What do you think is maybe the most discussed right now inside the front office there?
I mean, I think that the quarterback spot is one that we already know who's you know, going to be the guy, right? It's going to be Bryce Young. And that was the first thing that I got out of it. Then the second thing is that there's a lot of guys, and you talk about position battles, that can catch the ball. Ajay Hall was fantastic in the game, right? And this is what Minshew did, a few days ago, where he came in and had just that tremendous A-day game, and then, you know, he kind of showed out and got on everyone's radar. And I feel like that's kind of the same thing that we're dealing with right now with the receivers. You know, I thought that Javon Baker was going to have a big game. And, you know, and like you said, you know, he was just kind of there. So anyway, well, look, it was a lot of fun. I'm going to bring you back on later in the show to kind of get back into some more stuff here. But I got to get Tony's opinions on this as we roll on. So stick around and come back.
I will. And please give Tony my condolences. I know he's a huge soccer fan, and the soccer world is in shambles right now. So please, you know, let him know I'm thinking about him.
I will. All right. We'll bring you back in a little bit. Let's add Tony Tsoukalos to the stream. Let's talk some A-Day game with you.
Trey, my heart with the soccer.
Is it like, did London lose or something? I mean, I don't know.
No, they're starting this whole other league. It's going to ruin. We're not going to spend too much time talking about soccer, guys. Don't worry. But it's ruining the whole concept of world soccer. So it's terrible. Terrible stuff, Mick.
Is it like the people that want to have like an extended playoff?
It's kind of like this, Mick. Imagine, sorry for this brief aside, everyone, but imagine if Alabama, this probably doesn't sound bad to you guys, but imagine if Alabama, LSU, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Texas were all locked into the playoff, and no matter what they did, they're always going to be in the playoff.
Right.
Because they are the money generators, you know? So that's kind of a little bit what it's like. It's not so bad if you're Alabama. It's not so bad if you're one of the big teams that are in this new league. But, hey, you know, I think it's a good time for me to focus on Alabama because get my mind off the soccer world, right?
Yeah, well, look, I gotta say thanks, Josh, for the super chat, even though you're an LSU fan. And I'll tell you this right now. Look, man, for those of you that are hanging out with us, whether you're Alabama fans, college football fans like Josh, you're an LSU fan, we really appreciate you being here. Like and subscribe as you hang out. And if you're listening to the podcast of our show, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, just say Roll Tide with a 5-star rating. But we appreciate the super chat as well. All right. Well, look, Tony, and let me tell everyone, Tony Tsoukalos obviously is a big part of BamaInsider.com. You can read his work at BamaInsider.com. We're the Alabama Rivals site, and he joins us each and every Monday for Monday Night Quarterback. First off, we heard Trey giving his thoughts on the 8A game. Your thoughts on the 8A game?
Yeah, I think you have to come away impressed with a lot of things. I think, look, the first question that you came into this scrimmage asking yourself was, you know, was Bryce Young, is he going to be the quarterback? You know, does Alabama have a certified starter? I think coming out of this scrimmage, yes. The answer is yes. I think, you know, he proved himself. Earned MVP honors. Was he perfect? No. I mean, look, he nearly threw a pick six at the end zone. He got strip sacked for a touchdown, but he looked great at times. And he definitely, if you didn't see his promise on the afternoon, you were pretty blind because, you know, he made some plays that were just, you know, really encouraging. You go back to the Byron Young kind of juke out before he threw the ball to Roydell Williams. Yeah. I mean, and he had a few throws. It kind of seemed like once he got his momentum, he was, you know, he'd have these streaks, right? And he looked really good. Really encouraged by, speaking of Roydell Williams, really encouraged by both running backs, him and Jace McClellan. I think Alabama's going to be, I mean, we all kind of knew this. They're going to be so deep at running back, but I think a lot of people forgot about Roydell Williams, and he kind of opened up some eyes on the scrimmage as well. And then Ajay Hall, man, wow. Look, the thing that, you know, I'm writing about this tomorrow, but the thing that stood out to me is 2 years ago, John Mechie wins MVP honors at A-Day. And when we asked Nick Saban about him, he scowled at us and you know, he was really defensive and said, you know, oh, it's just A-Day. You know, Nick Saban talked highly of Ajay Hall, and he hates giving, you know, hype to freshmen on A-Day, especially when they play for the second team. But look, even he had some nice things to say about Ajay. or Ajay. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing. It's probably Ajay Hall. But, you know, he said some nice things on ESPN, had a lot of positive remarks about him after the game. So I like him. I see, you know, like a Jerry Jeudy type with him, a little bigger, really explosive player. It can make any kind of catch. I'm super excited about him.
Yeah. Well, he's got the same number as Waddle. And I mean, this number, like I see 17, right? And I'm going, every time I turn around, that's becoming like this new number. Kenyon Drake had it. I mean, remember Kenyon Drake and what he was able to do in the championship game, helping Alabama beat Clemson, you know, and then like Waddle. And then now this guy, I mean, I that's the great thing about Alabama is like, you know, there's no numbers retired, you know, it's just the next guy to wear it. But you talk about the speed and you're like, hey, he reminds me of him.
Yeah. Well, Ajay is bringing some more size. I mean, look, Jalen Waddle's what, 5'10", you know, on a good day. And Ajay Hall's 6'3", you know, and that's another thing too, that's exciting about him is Alabama hasn't necessarily had that bigger receiver that can go up. And you just imagine that size. And look, we saw his jumping ability on A-Day. I think he's a guy that can really make plays in the red zone. You know, I love those receivers that you can just kind of throw that fade in the corner of the end zone and that, you know, they're going to come down with it. And Ajay Hall might be that guy. You know, we'll see. You know, we'll see if he's that guy that can just be that deadly person. But I think he's definitely going to be someone to watch.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, I thought that the game was, I mean, obviously just because of COVID and everything else, I just was well-timed. It was nice to get out there. I brought this up with Trey, but it could be the largest crowd of in the country, really, like at least a sporting event since
I think COVID. I read it was. It was the largest post maybe in the world for sporting events. I'm not quite sure of that, but I think I read that somewhere that it was the largest post-COVID event.
So, I mean, fingers crossed that, you know, everything goes well there. I mean, I know that they did a nice job social distancing because, you know, we had like a whole row by ourselves, you know, when we were out there. So that's good. And then the other thing was Nick Saban just kind of like lingering behind the game. I mean, that was fun to watch for us. I'm sure it probably wasn't that much fun, though, for the players. And Kool-Aid caught the wrath of Nick a few times. But you know, Kool-Aid can play football. I mean, Nick's riding him because – he's going to turn this guy into the next Minka Fitzpatrick.
Definitely. I mean, and he's a guy that, you know, when you look at some of the freshmen that can play right away, JaQuincy McKinstry is kind of like one of those guys that can do that. He kind of faces an uphill battle because, you know, you got Jalen Armour Davis at cornerback and obviously you got Josh Job, but he's one of those guys in the mix at that cornerback slot to replace Patrick Surtain. And look, he had an interception and he looked pretty good. Obviously I think he had to go against, I'm pretty sure he had to go against Ajay Hall a few times and that's a tough, you know, a tough draw, but I think JaQuincy McKinstry is going to be a player. And you look at it, you're right. Nick Saban's going to be hard on those guys that he thinks has a lot of potential. So that's a good sign that he's really kind of riding him.
Yeah. Well, it was fun watching Nick out there. Easy to spot with that pink sports coat that he was wearing.
Almost got ran over on a play too, so maybe fortunately that pink sports blazer was easy to spot and he didn't get run over, but there was an interception that he almost, you know, he did. That's the last thing Alabama wants is an injury to its head coach on A-Day.
Yeah, especially him. I don't know that I'd want to be the guy to run over him.
Yeah, the consequences for that, right? So
well, let's talk defense. I'm going to pivot back to the offense again, but I'm going to stick with defense right now. We were talking about McKinstry and what he's able to do. I'm trying to figure out if the reason that Alabama's offense, I thought, struggled was because they didn't play well, or was it because Alabama's defense is that good? And by the way, what's up, Kyle? One of my buddies there chatting in.
Yeah, so I think that it's a little bit of both. When you look at it, the offensive line's not all there, you know, and I think this offensive line is going to be the biggest point of improvement from now until the fall, not only with the people coming back from injury, but also some of the young guys getting a little bit better. I think that contributed. It wasn't, you know, necessarily a banner day for everyone. Like I said, Bryce Young kind of got blindsided on that strip sack. You know, there was some pressure, but there's also plenty to be encouraged with, because look, Alabama provided this pressure without Will Anderson, without Christian Harris. I think you saw Chris Broswell. You know, I remember during the spring, there was a couple people asking about, you know, how's Drew Sanders? How's Chris Broswell? Well, we didn't get to see Drew Sanders on A-Day. He was one of the players that was out, but, you know, former five-star Chris Broswell, you kind of forget about him. He was, you know, one of the hottest guys Alabama brought in last year's class. And now, you know, what, three sacks on A-Day? It's like, you know, everyone wants to talk about Ajay Hall and some of the coming out parties on the offense. But Chris Broswell, you know, he's definitely someone to look at on the defense. And if he can kind of have a role, and Nick Saban kind of said that he could, you know, put him in one of those pass rushing roles, even if it's just a third down, get after the quarterback, I think he could play a role. He's fast. We saw how quickly he could get in the backfield. And so Alabama has a lot of those guys. Will Anderson, Drew Sanders is another guy. So they're going to be loaded in this pass rush. So I think there's plenty to be excited about on the defensive side of the ball.
You know, it was a few years ago where Alabama didn't have any linebackers, and it really cost them the 2019 season. They could have won a national championship that year, right? They had the injury, two injuries at the beginning of the season that cost them their starting linebackers, and they had, you know, a couple of, what was it, Shane Lee and Christian Harris, who had to play all the time, and they were freshmen, right. and it didn't go well. But they learned, right? But it didn't go well. It's the opposite right now. I look at the linebacker spot for Alabama, and I just think that it's as probably as deep and as strong as it's been in a long time. Do you agree with that? And of those guys, who do you like the best?
I definitely do. Well, you know, look, one of the positives from A-Day 2 was Deontay Lawson started aside from Jalen Moody. You know, Shane, we didn't obviously see Shane Lee. I think he was one of the players that is out. But look, you know, he looked really good starting alongside Jalen Moody. So you got him, you've got Shane Lee. Who knows? Maybe you bring in Henry Tuitolo. You're obviously going to get Christian Harris back. That's pretty loaded right there. Then you look at the, you know, outside linebackers. You've got, like I said, Will Anderson, Christopher Allen, probably the best duo in the SEC, one of the best pass rushing duos in the nation. You got them, and then you've got guys behind them like Drew Sanders, like Chris Broswell, like Dallas Turner. It's really loaded. Like you said, like they're two, three deep at all these positions, and it's really encouraging.
And it also gives Alabama, too, some options because, you know, they can maybe – they can play these guys in different formations. I mean, they I felt like in 2019 that the defense was really limited because you didn't have any options as far as linebacker was concerned.
Yeah, and there's just a lot of guys that can play in different packages, like you said, in different, you know, formations. They've got really athletic guys too, so it's not just, you know, slow guys. I mean, a lot of Christian Harris can cover. Jalen Moody, I think, is going to be able to cover. So, yeah, it's pretty encouraging when you look at that pass rush.
Really interested to see what happens with Henry To'o from Tennessee. I mean, is he really going to transfer to Alabama? That's what the rumors are. And then this defense just gets that much better. I mean, he's one of the best run stoppers in the SEC and in the country. But without him, they're still really good. Now let's talk.
You could argue that they don't necessarily need him. I think they'd obviously take him. But if that didn't happen, Mick, I think they're still in really good shape.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, look, they're obviously going to find the spot. He'll have a uniform. He'll look good in an Alabama uniform. He'll contribute in an Alabama uniform. But even the way that they're set up right now, this defense is already going to be really talented, and it's exciting. I mean, it's just so much different than last year. We were playing this game, and we're looking at this offense that you're going, okay, yeah, I guess we didn't need four first-round receivers. We have two, and it's still great, you know. It's more balanced. I thought the offensive line was better. I mean, no offense to 2019 offensive line. 2020 line's the best that I remember at Alabama, top to bottom, right? And now we got to look at where they are right now and just kind of figure out exactly what things are going to look like. Now, we did have some injuries to the O-line. So with that said, you know, Nick Saban kind of made, you know, some references to the, you know, guys were playing in spots they might not be in if everyone's healthy. there were some guys that were out, and maybe that's why Bryce didn't always look that good. He was still the MVP of the game, so they obviously thought that what he did do when he had time in the pocket, and sometimes he just created. I mean, his speed, the ability to move around is going to help that offensive line out. But what did you think of the offensive line, and do we have any kind of idea of guys like Evan Neal, why they weren't there? I mean, are they substantial injuries or just
– I don't think anything on the offensive line is substantial. I think Alabama is expecting to be at full strength during the fall, you know, when it returns for fall camp. So that's encouraging. You know, you're going to get Emil Ekior back as well. So, you know, you'll have Chris Owens at center, probably – Evan Neal at left tackle, and then Ekior at one of those guard positions. Then you got to fill those other two spots. But you're looking at a lot stronger unit with those two guys back in it. And Alabama's got a lot of, you know, promising guys. I think also, you know, Pierce Quick will be back at that time. So we'll see, you know, if he can join the mix as well. Tommy Brown's another big guy. Look, we saw some good stuff from Damian George, another, you know, a guy that's lost some weight since coming to Alabama, but a big mountain, 6'7" type guy. You know, I mean, look, Alabama could have a huge offensive line this year. I know everyone's excited about, you know, JC Latham and Tommy Brockermeyer, and for good reason. Those guys are studs, but they're gonna have to earn their way on the field. I think everyone gets excited about the five-star tackles, but Alabama also brings back ton of experience on the offensive line. So if they want to go that route with the experience, they can. If somebody like JC Latham or Tommy Brockermeyer beats one of those guys out, so be it. And then, you know, and then they'll take a starting spot. But I think that competition is going to really make the unit kind of even better. And there's still talent on this unit. It's just a lack of experience. And so maybe it takes some time to gel. I think you mentioned it with Bryce Young's speed probably helps. I don't think anyone's expecting Bryce to have the record-breaking season that Mack had in his first year at Alabama. I think he can still be really good. I think he could even be Heisman-level good like Mack was. But, I mean, that season's kind of a lot to put on someone in their first year. But I do think that having Bryce Young come in and maybe offer a different kind of skill set to Mac Jones, it might actually suit Alabama better if its offensive line needs to gel. Having a guy like like Bryce Young – that can, you know, make plays in the pocket, you know, maybe if he is under pressure, dance away from a defender and still find someone. That could be exactly what Alabama needs right now. So, like we said with him too, it just really a lot to, you know, be optimistic about Bryce Young. Hang in there with the offensive line because it's going to be better. And I think, you know, there's a lot of positives to be taken from this Alabama offense for May Day.
He's Tony Tsoukalos. I'm Mick Gillespie. This is Monday Night Quarterback on Bama Insider YouTube. Thumbs up and subscribe as you hang out with us, guys. We really, really appreciate you being here. Whether you roll with the tide or you are a college football fan of another program, every Monday night at 6 o'clock, we get together and talk football. And of course, if you're an Alabama fan and you can't get enough of the Crimson Tide, you need to subscribe and follow BamaInsider.com. That's where Tony's work is posted each and every day. Andrew Bone handles recruiting. Kyle Henderson's our managing editor, and we try to throw stuff at you each and every day on the site that you're not going to get anywhere else. And been around a long time, the Alabama Rival site, and that's because we're pretty good at what we do, and we appreciate you guys for being here. All right, we're talking about the A-Day game, and I don't want to get away from it yet because there's still some more things to discuss with you. And I guess I got to switch gears now to the running back spot. Now, I don't know running back other than I see the guy with the ball. And if people are unable to tackle him and he gets yards, I think he's doing a pretty good job, right? Then I sit around people like Mike Johnson, the All-American from the 2009 championship team. And Mike's like, you know, yeah, but and then you'll watch and guys missing blocks, which I don't even notice, but it's happening, or, you know, they're out of position. And so there's a lot more to it, is what I'm saying, than running the football. Now, with that said, Jace McClellan is my favorite Alabama running back. Every time he's in the game, he's electric. Like he finds space. It always looks like he's ready to break a big run. He's so different than a lot of the other running backs that Alabama has had because, you know, he's on skates and he's quick and he doesn't have the size of a Derrick Henry. or a Najee, but he kind of reminds me of the guy that was one of the running backs that we had when Saban's first year. Anyway, but with this offense, I just think that this style could really be beneficial to Alabama. What did you think of him?
I like Jace McClellan. I also like Roydell Williams, who was doing the same stuff too against the first team defense, which I thought was really impressive. The guy that kind of Jace McClellan's a guy that I already kind of saw from last year, and he had the big runs last year too. You know, what do you have that 80 yard run against Arkansas? So you're right, big play potential from him. I really liked what I saw from Roydell Williams. And you know, Saban revealed after the second scrimmage that Roydell also led the team in yardage in that game too. And he's a guy that we just kind of forgot about, kind of swept away under the rug. You know, he didn't get a lot of playing time last year and he didn't quite have the big breakout runs like Jace McClellan did, but he's a guy. I think when you look at A-Day, what did A-Day show me? It showed me that both of these guys can catch out of the backfield. And that's really encouraging because you also got a guy like Keelan Robinson, who Alabama listed as a running back and a wide receiver. So obviously he can catch out of the backfield as well. They're losing a player in Najee Harris that did that extraordinarily well, catching out of the backfield. So it's really nice to see that Alabama has multiple backs that can do that, that can be those multifaceted backs. I think that makes Alabama deadly. I think that, you know, if they have a bunch of guys that can catch out of the backfield, that opens up, you know, more opportunities. And I think Nick Saban during the ESPN broadcast, I wasn't listening to that, but I went back and heard it. He said that, you know, Alabama has four backs that can contribute, and he listed them off. He didn't even mention Trey Sanders, who can do all the things we were just talking about as well. You know, I think he was talking about Brian Robinson, Keelan Robinson, Jace McClellan, and Roydell Williams. Add Trey Sanders into that mix. I mean, this is really loaded backfield. Kamar Wheaton's coming into the top back in this year's class. He'll be here in the summer. So, yeah, it's loaded, and it's loaded with a lot of guys that can do a lot of things.
Maybe I'm thinking Terry Grant, but when he didn't
– Jace is a little bit bigger. Maybe, maybe Roydell could be in that role, though. Roydell's a little bit on the smaller, speedier side. But they're both kind of guys that they can still knock you down. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Roydell's kind of like a little bit of a bowling ball. And Jace McClellan, you know, I think he's built a little bit bigger than that. But he's still fast and he can still move.
The fact that he didn't bring up Trey Sanders, does that tell us that Trey Sanders is probably going to be rehabbing this year? I mean,
I don't know. I think it could have been not. Yeah, I think I hate taking too much into those. He might have just been talking about the players that he was working with this spring, and obviously they weren't working with Trey Sanders this spring. I think if Trey Sanders is healthy and it's looking like he's progressing well, he'll enter that mix because he, you know, he could be the most talented out of all of them. Depending on how he comes back from that hip injury, you know, it's really also he hasn't played a ton of football in the last 2 years. So we'll see how he just comes back and how he's able to regain his, you know, kind of five-star form. But he's got a lot of talent there. I think Alabama, and probably this is the right, you know, way to take it, just kind of take a wait-and-see approach with Trey Sanders, you know. And they can do that because they have so much depth at running back. They don't need to push him. You know, he could be a shot in the arm late in the season when they need an extra weapon. And then all of a sudden, boom, Trey Sanders is there. So I don't know. I think Alabama's right to kind of take things slow with him and not expect too much and then just see where that takes them.
Well, the good thing is, too, is that we know he's got a ton of talent. I mean, he's the highest recruited running back of all of them, you know. And
Some
people forget that, and he's had some bad luck. Obviously, the car accident, you know, wasn't his fault, but hopefully, you know, by the time like you said, maybe he's, you know, ready at some point during the season, and he is a shot in the arm. I mean, you know, over the course of the schedule, which starts out against Miami, kind of getting back to the offensive line and where you worry that they've got to get things figured out pretty quick because this schedule to me is pretty tough. I mean, you got Miami, you got Mercer, who you could beat with your fourth string, and then you go to Florida.
Yeah, and I think, first of all, as Miami will be a decent game possibly, but I don't think that's going to be too much of a struggle. And you, I think by the time they get to Florida, things should be figured out. Alabama seems to figure out these problems a lot quicker than necessarily in the offseason that a lot of people give them credit for. I don't know how many times they've had to rebuild the secondary and everyone was afraid of that. And then, you know, they're able to do that a lot faster. It should be the same with the offensive line, in my opinion. I think they've got too much talent there. That, you know, and like I said, some of it's coming back. It's just a matter of getting healthy. Like guys like Emil Ekiyor, we already know what we're getting from him. He's a stud. So I'm not, from an Alabama perspective, I'm not too worried about that. Nick Saban doesn't seem too worried about that. If anything, that's your tale, right there. It's just that he doesn't seem too concerned about it. Every time he talks about the offensive line, he's like, you know, it's going to be fine. You know, we're just waiting to get healthy.
Talking about the offensive line and then blocking for Bryce Young, not very impressed with Paul Tyson. I mean, I know he comes in with the legacy, you know, being that he's related to Bear Bryant and he had a great high school career. But I just didn't really see anything with him when he was in the game. Maybe it was just me. Maybe it was the offensive line. But there was just never that moment. Like you mentioned, the play where Bryce rolls out and then does like this little head fake and then fires a completion down the field. It turns into a huge play and you're like, okay, yeah, this guy's, it's there. Is Alabama in trouble as far as backup quarterbacks are concerned?
I don't think so. I mean, look, if the problems are going to be there on the first team offensive line, they're going to be there on the second team offensive line. Paul obviously wasn't working with the first team offense. I think could he have had a better game? Sure. Yeah, I think all three quarterbacks could have had a better game. But I think there's some plays he wants back, some throws he wants back. But I don't think there's a concern. I think he's a big, strong quarterback with a capable arm. And I think he's, you know, it's just a matter of getting people healthy and getting him more confidence. I think he's just going to need more reps. I mean, I know he's been in the system longer, but Bryce has gotten more reps with, you know, on the field in game like atmospheres. So, you know, I think that those are really valuable. And I think that that's probably the reason why Bryce is ahead of Paul right now. But I don't necessarily think you should be too worried. And also Jalen Milroe is a guy that, you know, we didn't get to see, but he's a guy that's caused some excitement. Give him another summer of development, let him learn the playbook a little bit more. And maybe by the middle of the season, he's a guy that can, you know, challenge for that backup spot as well. Just depending on how things go. You know, I think that competition between, you know, Bryce seems to have separated himself as a starter, but maybe that competition towards Paul and Jalen, that might make both of them better. And then who knows, you know, maybe if something was to happen to Bryce, that, you know, the winner of, you know, maybe that pushes Paul a little bit more so that he's more ready if that happens, you know? So it's still kind of early on all the quarterbacks. But I don't think it's time to be concerned when you look at Paul Tyson. I think there's a lot of talent there. There's a really strong arm. So it's just a matter of putting it all together.
He's Tony Tsoukalos. I'm Mick Gillespie. Thanks for hanging out with us on Monday Night Quarterback. We do this every Monday on the Bama Insider YouTube channel. Thumbs up and subscribe as you hang out. And don't forget, you can always go to BamaInsider.com for the latest on the Crimson Tide, including recruiting Andrew Bone. We'll have his show coming up later on this week here on the YouTube channel. You'll hear from Kyle Henderson. He'll give you all the nuggets as far as Alabama's concerned. And now we switch gears away from the 8A game to the other big topic having to do with quarterbacks, Tony, and that is the NFL draft. That's coming up next. It's like every time we turn around, there's something really fun to cover, right? And so we're closing in on this draft. And, I mean, the question really is quarterback. Is Mac Jones going to go ahead of Justin Fields? And did the 49ers trade up to get Mac? And if Mac doesn't go there, where is he going to go? If Fields doesn't go there, where is he going to go? This is the most intriguing quarterback and NFL draft since – I mean, I got to say, this has been a long time since we've had one that's this interesting. And I'm guessing the first three will be QBs. So a lot there for you to unpack.
Yeah, I think when you look at Mac Jones, maybe the jury is more split on him and maybe you have more guys. It's hard to tell because you don't necessarily hear from the NFL GMs. So So it's hard to get their read on it. But when you look at the analyst, there's some people that think that, you know, he's a lock to go number three to the Niners and that that would be a good pick. And then there's some people that think, you know, oh man, that's, they're overpicking Jones and he could really slide if it doesn't go number three. There's a possibility. Let's say the jury split with the, you know, GMs, maybe Jones does slide a little bit if he does, you know, if let's just say the 49ers go with Lance or Fields at number three, maybe you could see Jones slide, you know, maybe he could slide all the way to, I really can't see past New England, you know, and I think even at that point, you're going to see teams like New England might have to trade up for him. If he doesn't go number three, you might see a Washington or a Chicago trade up for him. I just don't see him slipping. I think there's, you know, there's a need at quarterback for a lot of teams. You got teams like the Patriots who seem to have filled most of their needs and they just need a quarterback. I think at that point, I don't know what their opinion of Jones is, but if it's high, I can't imagine them not, if they're in the position to draft him, I can't imagine they don't need very many needs. They don't have too many needs. They filled a lot of them in free agent. Because, you know, I think Washington needs a quarterback. Would they trade up for a Jones? I don't think he's going to slip too far. I guess if you're super pessimistic and you just think he's just going to totally fall, I mean, maybe he could fall to the Redskins at 19 or the Bears at 20. I just do not at all see that happening. But I don't see him slipping past 15. And to be honest with you, I think either New England or Washington or Chicago probably trades up somewhere around 10 to 11, 12, 13, something like that, and probably pulls the trigger on him. That's just what I think. If he doesn't go number three to the Niners, which I also think is a strong possibility.
Where do you think the best spot for him would be to go? You know, I know that like monetarily you want to get drafted as high as you possibly can. You know, you could go to the 49ers and look, they were in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. So it's not like they're a terrible franchise. It's not like being taken by the Jets, you know, where they've just been awful forever, right? But at the same time, would it be better for him to slide back to New England? I mean, you know, if in a perfect world, as far as like performance-based, not money-based, but performance-based, where do you think the best landing spot for Mac would be?
I think San Francisco has a winning team that if, you know, if he could come in there, learn under Jimmy Garoppolo for a season, and you probably have more of a learning season at San Francisco than New England. I mean, I personally think he'd probably have a better chance of beating out Cam than he would at beating out Jimmy G. I think both places, like you said, are good spots. I think New England has a good offensive line that could really block for Mac. So if you are concerned about his mobility, he'll be able to be more of a pocket passer. You know, you look at what the New England's done with their offensive line. They have one of the better units in the league. They also brought in two tight ends, so they'll have the best tight end unit in the league. And, you know, you see these young quarterbacks, a lot of times they lean on tight ends, especially at the NFL. Well, if Mac was to go to the Patriots, he'd have two of the best, and Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry. He's also got a capable running game in that situation with Damian Harris, who looks like he's kind of on the upswing. And, you know, the Patriots have a few backs, Sonny Michel. But he'll have plenty of weapons, too, in San Francisco as well. So I think those two spots, I don't think you want him to go to a team that's totally rebuilding, because I think I don't think he wants any quarterback. Like, I don't think Alabama fans want to see Mac Jones on the Jets if somehow they change their mind and want to pick him number two. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't want to be on the Jets if I was any of these quarterbacks. So it might all end up working pretty well for Mac, because I think the two teams I see him mocked to the most are the Niners and the Patriots, and both those teams have good offenses around them and good scheme fits. So even if he does slip back to the Pats, I think he could be in a good situation. I think if I'm Mac Jones, I probably want to go to the Niners because it's a good you know, fit, and you're also going number three overall, so it's kind of a win-win for him. But I don't think either of those two spots he'd be too upset with.
So the draft's what, next Thursday, right?
Yes. Yes.
That's going to be a lot of fun. All right, look, I'm going to bring our buddy Trey back in, and we're going to have a little bit of fun here. All right. I want you guys, we need to write this down though, Trey. So you have anywhere to that you can put our predictions down on a piece of paper so that we can come back and talk about this at a later time?
Yes, I will get this documented.
Okay, we're gonna
mock draft it right now.
Yes, we're gonna. Well, only the Alabama guys. Okay. So we're gonna predict where the five guys that could go in the first round, maybe six, but we'll say five, right? Are gonna go. Be okay. Fun. Who gets this right? All right, Trey, you're in the middle, underneath me. I'll let you go first. Mac Jones.
I think Mac Jones is gonna go number nine to the Denver Broncos. I think it's a perfect fit. You know, I don't know if he'll be around at that point, even, you know, there's so much buzz, but I think he will be. I think he'll, you know, maybe get taken in the top 10. I think the Broncos at number nine is my pick. What do you got, Tony?
I got number three to the San Francisco 49ers. I'm going to ride that. I think it's going to happen. I think Kyle Shanahan likes him, and I actually think it's going to be a great pick. And that's coming from a Patriots fan who would like to see Mac Jones on the Patriots. But I think San Francisco, that's my pick.
You know, I look at this and I go, for you know, there's just certain people, for whatever reason, that have doubters, right? And he's one of those guys. And I was one of those doubters as well, you know? And I just didn't think that at this point in time last year that he was going to be that good at quarterback. I figured Bryce Young would eventually take his job. I thought it was a real quarterback battle, even though you're talking about a guy who had spent all those years as a backup and knew the system and did everything right as a scout team quarterback and all that stuff. And then over the course of time, he's just won me over. I mean, like, he hit the feather deep, the feather that he does on the deep balls, the feathering on those deep balls, I'll get it out. It's great. I mean, and that'll work in the NFL. And so if the 49ers skip over him and take Justin Fields, we don't even know what Justin Fields does. I mean, all we know is that they tried that fake punt in Georgia. He went to Ohio State and he won one big game. Really? I mean, like, and they killed Clemson.
I think you're selling him a little short there, Mick. I think he's still a pretty good quarterback. Let's not.
I'm selling him down the river, but I think he's picked. I think the 49ers are going to take him. And he does have a lot of skill. He's got a great skill set, you know. And I just think
strong that, arm, he can run.
Yeah.
He's very, you know, to me, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Cam Newton.
Right.
And before Cam Newton, you know, took a beating in the NFL, he was one of the better players, one of the better quarterbacks. So they both could be good. I think it's going to determine where they fall, right?
Well, somehow, some way, I think that for poor Mac, the Chicago Bears are going to find a way to draft him. Maybe they'll make a big trade and they'll get in there. If he doesn't get taken third, then he's going to slide further down. I agree with you. If the Broncos have a chance to get him, they will. But I think depending on how far he goes, I could see the Bears sliding in there and you know, making another one of those big trades. And him ending up in Chicago. There's a franchise that needs a franchise quarterback. They haven't had one in a long time, and I could see Mac Jones being that guy. All right, let's go to receivers now. We got two guys. It's a two-part question. You got to pick Waddle or Smitty. Who goes first? Who goes second? And where do they go? Trey?
Man, this is such a tough one. Both guys are just so talented. I think Waddle is more of an NFL-ready player, though, and I think teams are going to take him. I don't think they're worried about that injury at all. I don't think, you know, they even are thinking about that at this point. I got the draft order up. For a while, I've been back and forth, but something inside, and I know the conversation has shifted. You see a lot of the mock drafts this week coming out saying quarterback, 1, 2, 3, whatever. For some reason, I think he's going to go number two to the Jets. I know that's a little bit of a hot take, but I just see Jalen Waddle, you know, being that valuable. And I think teams realize that now and are going to take him that high. And it's a little crazy, but I got Jalen Waddle going number two to the Jets. I think he's the first Alabama player taken.
Whoa. So you think that he goes, the Jets don't take a quarterback?
I don't. I thought it was going to be Sewell if it wasn't a quarterback for a while. But, you know, the more I look into it, it fits. They're looking for weapons wherever they can get them. Jalen Waddle, in my opinion, I think in their opinion, is the best receiver available. Most NFL-ready player, if nothing else. Like Justin Jefferson came in the league this year and made an immediate impact. They're looking for a player like that. I'm not saying they can't get that in a quarterback, but probably the one quarterback they could is Trevor Lawrence. He's not falling to number two. So I think you go wide receiver there. I think you take Jalen Waddle.
So they traded away Sam Darnold, though, man.
I know, but hey, don't let the guy keep going.
Okay, I don't have a pick, but
because his draft would be, it would be insane if that happened.
Well, anyway, they would trade out of the pick if they didn't pick.
I think they could still sign a quarterback. I mean, there's some big names left around, and obviously drafting a quarterback hasn't worked too well up there.
I think that if they did that, that's bold. That's really bold, Trey. But if they did that, I think they're trading out at number two.
It freed the cap space for it, so watch out now.
You know, all right, well, where does Smitty go?
Just for me right now, I think Smitty is going to go in the top 10 as well. I think Smitty is going to go number 7 to Detroit. It could be Chase at number 7 to Detroit. I think they go 6 and 7, or excuse me, it could be Chase at number 6 to Miami or at number 7 to Detroit. I think Smith and Chase go 6-7. Don't know exactly which order, but I think he's either going to be Miami or Detroit.
Well, own it, man. Own it. All right, Tony, I just moved the banner across from across your face, and now you can talk. But yeah. Trey just threw out some
hot takes. Like I said,
that is the hottest scorching take I have heard in a while. But kudos to Trey for being bold. There's a couple of things I'd like to know what's going to happen. Is Atlanta going to take a quarterback? Or are they going to take Pitts? I'm just going to assume that they're going to ask too much for a quarterback and they're going to see Pitts as the best non-quarterback in this draft. So I have Atlanta taking Pitts. And then I think you might see Cincinnati taking Chase. At that point, you could see Miami bite on one of the receivers. I actually think they'll probably go tackle there, especially if Cincinnati, you know, goes with Chase. So I think I might agree with Trey in the Lions taking someone, and I think maybe they take Waddle. So I have him going maybe 7. I do think that one of these guys, undeservingly so, will probably drop out of the top 10. I kind of see that maybe happening with Devontae. I know, look, speed sells, and that's why Jalen Waddle, that's why I have him going ahead. I actually think that Devontae Smith probably be the better receiver of the two. But I have Devontae then going to the Eagles at number 12, who look pretty smart for trading down to 12 and still getting a guy that they would have looked pretty good picking where they normally were at 6.
Yeah, look, I agree. I think the Eagles are going to end up with Smitty too. And I'm with Mel Kiper. I think that he's the best receiver in the draft. I mean, and we'll find out. And, you know, it's hard to really say production, Matt, like, hey, this guy is better, this guy isn't. I mean, a lot of it has to do with the team that you're on. If they can't get you the ball, I mean, there's only so much that you're going to be able to do. Look at Amari Cooper, you know, compared to Raiders to Dallas. Now, all of a sudden, he's one of the best receivers in the game. And when he was with the Raiders, they just couldn't get him the ball enough, right? But I think Waddle's got a lot of momentum. He's fast. He's a game changer, obviously. Smitty's more of a possession guy. I think he's a game changer too. I like those guys that you can rely on, but really both guys bring just so much to the table. But when Waddle and Smitty were on the same team, Waddle was the guy. I mean, you know, like he really was. So we might not have known how great Smitty was, who kind of reminds me of Jerry Rice. You know, he's like a Jerry Rice type of receiver. Just does everything. It's not flashy. And then over the course of time, you realize like how good this guy really is, right? If he goes to the Lions, I mean, that's terrible. I mean, like that would be like the worst spot in the whole league to go to. I mean, you feel sorry for him. Like, you know, it'd be like going to Vanderbilt in the SEC. You know, it's they're so bad every year. They don't get to the playoffs. Now they don't even have a quarterback because they traded. You know, they traded Stafford. So no, I'm just kidding. Look, I don't know. I could see that happening. I could see him going to Detroit. And I've always thought for some reason that Smitty's going to reunite with a former Alabama quarterback. And, you know, maybe it's Tua, but maybe it's Jalen. I mean, wouldn't it be something if it was Jalen Hurts, you know, and you got three quarterbacks in the league that were all on the same roster. And then all of a sudden you start pairing up guys, you know, Chase goes to join Burrow in Cincinnati. And then all of a sudden in Philly, you got the Alabama connection with Smitty. So I agree with you, Tony. I think that that's logical. And now, the thing that you, if there were some trades involved, I could see teams thinking along the same lines as Mel Kiper, where they're going, you know what, Smitty's a very underrated, and the way that the game has changed, receiver is such a big part of football right now. You know, I mean, like, you can't hold these guys anymore. You know, now all of a sudden you can go across the middle because you're not getting your head taken off. And so a player like Smitty that didn't have the, maybe that didn't have the size in the past to be able to do that now can, you know, and he can take advantage of his quickness. But I think that's as far as I'm concerned, I think you're pretty close to it. I could see maybe one of them ending up with the Dolphins too, if not the Eagles. But
yeah, that would depend. Like I said, some of that kind of depends on, you know, where does Pitts go? Where does, you know, there's variables there. But yeah, I think one of them could go to the Dolphins.
Pitts is dynamic. I mean, and whoever ends up with him is going to have a dynamic player. I mean, I don't remember being that impressed by a tight end since I watched Jason Witten basically destroy Alabama. I was on the sideline of the football game back in the day, and I'm watching where they just couldn't stop him. I mean, like, they just throw the ball across the middle. He'd take like eight guys with him, and in a very different type of tight end way. And then this guy, you know, you look at how many catches. He only has like four or five catches a game, right, Pitts? But they're impact catches. They're big, you know, and he's definitely someone that's going to go quick in this draft. All right, let's talk about Patrick Surtain. He's, I think, could be the first or second cornerback taken. I could see him wearing that Dallas Cowboys star on the side of his helmet. That would look good. He'd look good as a Raider. I could see him with the Raider logo on there. Somebody's going to get a really good cornerback, Trey.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Patrick Surtain was the best cornerback in the country this year, no doubt about it. You know, I thought he'd do a little bit better at that awards ceremony, a little bit surprising. But I think, you know, this NFL draft will make up for it here. I think he's a no-doubt top 10 pick. I have him locked in at number 10 there with the Cowboys. Or is that – yeah, number 10 there with the Cowboys. I just think it fits. It would be perfect. He could link up with a former teammate out there in Diggs as well. And, you know, I just think it fits. Dallas is in need of that position, and you know, Patrick Surtain can really fill in nice there at corner. You know, maybe he slides a little bit. I don't think Las Vegas is 17. You know, maybe he slides to 17. But you know, I'd be surprised if he fell out of the top 10. What do you think, Tony?
Yeah, there's some possibilities. I think Dallas at 10 is a really popular one. How about this though? I just thought of this, right? So let's say Denver wants to trade. Denver's at 9, right? Let's say Denver wants to trade to ensure they get a quarterback. So they trade up with Atlanta because they have the best spot. Atlanta moves to 9. Atlanta needs some defense. They might think, hey, we got to win now with, you know, with Matt Ryan. Maybe Atlanta picks them at 9 after trading out. I think I'm going to go bold. I'm going to have some different takes. I think maybe Atlanta trades with Detroit. I'm not sorry, not with Detroit, with Denver. Moving to 9, they pick up a pick, and then they pick Patrick Surtain at number 9 ahead of Dallas. And they kind of build that defense up, and then, you know, maybe try to make a run with Ryan and kind of build some more help on the other side of the ball.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I just see him being kind of like middle, you know, that middle area if he gets past the Cowboys. And I think if the Cowboys – Jerry Jones has talked about Kyle Pitts so much. I mean, I could see them trying to make something happen to get the big tight end. But Dallas, just like the Raiders, just like a lot of teams in the NFL, need a shutdown corner. They may be better off just not getting the guy that they want in Pitts and getting Surtain, because he just has the look of one of these 15-year, 10-year guys in the NFL that just does it, and you're like, okay, yeah, you just don't throw to that side of the ball. You know, he's just quietly great and shows up every day, does the job, doesn't embarrass you. He's just a pro, and he was a pro in college, you know, just did everything right. So came from a great family that played that position, and he's just followed on, you know. Like the family legacy. All right, Najee Harris, and I guess we're kind of running out of time, so let's do Najee right here, and this will be the last one that we do.
Yeah, this is a really hard one. It's tough for Najee because he, you know, in most years would be maybe top 10 talent, top 15 talent. I have him falling out of that. I have him still in the first round. You know, you look around, I could see Pittsburgh maybe taking him. You know, with everything going on with Connor there. Outside of that, I think some of these teams, you look in this 25 to 30 range, there's not too much need for a running back. You know, you look in Cleveland doesn't need one. Baltimore definitely, you know, they got J.K. Dobbins now. They could add a second back. It doesn't really fit there either. But Buffalo has been another hot one, and I think that really makes a lot of sense. They need a running back. So, you know, Dylan Singletary is not the answer. You know, whoever else they add, I'm slipping me right now who their second back. But, you know, Buffalo with Josh Allen, an already elite offense, you know, a defense that's building as well, a team that could really make a run for the Super Bowl, I think it would be perfect, a perfect fit for Najee Harris. He's a warm weather guy. He's from California, played, you know, here in Tuscaloosa. But I think it could really work out well there. That's what I got. What do you guys have?
Yeah, so I like both those spots. I think Pittsburgh might need more than Najee. I really kind of like the Buffalo pick because I think that's the one thing they need is that running back. You know, it's tough. I don't know where if I kind of want to put him in the first round because I think he's first round talent. I think at the very least, it could be a case of, look, Jacksonville has two first round picks. I could see at 33, a lot of teams, if Najee Harris isn't picked in the first round, I think a lot of teams are going to be calling up Jacksonville for that 33rd pick to start off day two. So I'm going to go Pittsburgh at 24, but I could see him slipping out of the first round. I don't agree with it, but if he does slip out of the first round, expect him to be one of the first guys to go in round two. And I kind of see a team trading up for Najee if he does slip out. If he slips out, it's just a matter of the running back position. It has nothing to say about Najee.
Here's the thing. Like, and I so saw him as Buffalo's running back of the future, right? That Thurman Thomas that they haven't had in years. Do you guys even know who Thurman Thomas is? Yeah. Okay, you remember him? He was Jim Kelly's security blanket. I mean, he helped them get to four Super Bowls, Buffalo. And this is the first year they've been really good since then, right? But then James Conner signed with another team. And now the Steelers don't have a running back. No Bell, no Connor. They need a running back. And I'm telling you, this kid right here does it all. I mean, like, he can catch, he can run, he's smart. He's a franchise. He's the face of a franchise type of guy. And I just think that the Steelers are going to look at this and go, you know, I know we can get a quality running back later in the draft, but are you really going to be able to take a risk? And what if you don't? You know, I mean, and I don't know who's out there free. But I'd say that Najee being in Pittsburgh would be about as not miss of a Alabama player in this draft. I mean, they always have a good offensive line. Big Ben's their quarterback. They're going to be good. They won 11 straight games last year, right? And they're always good. They're consistent. I'm a Ravens fan. I know. I watch them play every year. They're one of the most consistent franchises in professional sports. You know, they're just constantly really good. And when Minka went to the Steelers, he looked so good in that uniform, and I could see Najee going there as well. I think I agree with you again, Tony. I just think that the Steelers are in a spot where, you know what, like, why not go ahead and get this guy and, you know, have him as someone that you know you can count on, instead of rolling the dice later on in the draft. And, you know, who knows who, you know, might hit or you might not. But the problem is that not a lot of running backs are drafted in the first round anymore.
That's the big thing. It's not a matter of Najee's talent. It's a matter of is there a need? I think, if I believe right, that don't the Steelers have to kind of improve on their offensive line too? So that they might think that it's kind of, you know, they might want to solve that problem before they go over to Najee. It just depends on where a team is and where they feel their needs are. But if this is a matter of who deserves to be in the first round, like Trey said, I think, you know, Najee's really talented. He's probably in the top end of the first half.
Yeah,
top end of the first round. Sorry.
Pouncey retired. Yeah. Yesterday. Right.
So I mean, they might need some help. Then they might, you know, and maybe from an Alabama perspective, maybe an Alabama fan doesn't necessarily want him to go there because, you know, you need a line to block for him. But I think the best fit, if I'm Najee, I think the best fit, what I'm rooting for is Buffalo, other than having to live in Buffalo. Other than having to live in Buffalo, you're on a Super Bowl contending team, man. I think if they get a Najee Harris, look out, they could challenge the Chiefs. That could be a tough team.
That would be a great fan base to be around too.
That's true. Yeah. So maybe living in Buffalo is not the best, but the fan base, you really can't beat Bills Mafia. So
yeah, they're crazy out there, but it is awful cold. All right, guys, look, we went over our allotted time for this Monday Night Quarterback show, but it's because we've had so much fun and there was so many things that we needed to get into tonight. Trey, anything that you got going on besides graduation? And I got to say, I guess you're graduating, and if you have secured enough credits to walk across the stage at the University of Alabama, which Tony, did you do that?
I did. Yeah.
And I did that, so you would join us as alumnus. So yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, still got a week and a half here, so I got to finish it up. Nothing's in the bag yet, but it's looking good. Outside of that, nothing too crazy. We're going to keep getting the spring coverage going. Spring practice is now over, obviously, but still a lot to talk about. We're going to get Monday Night Quarterback next week. Amaya, not too crazy, though. We're covering baseball and everything else right now, some other stuff. So that's a lot of fun, but, pretty simple week again. What do you got going on, Tony?
Yeah, well, we talked a lot about Ajay Hall. We're going to have a story about him tomorrow, so make sure to check that out. And we'll still have kind of some end of spring camp stuff roll out later in the week. And then obviously, Andrew Bone's not here, but he's going to have a ton of recruiting as well.
Yeah. Yep. And don't forget, you can follow all of that at BamaInsider.com. Tony covering the team, Andrew Bone covering recruiting, which Alabama, every time I turn around, there's another big time commit coming their way. Nick Saban and his coaching staff never quit with the recruiting. We got you covered on the Alabama rival site, Bama Insider there. Hey, guys, thank you. Give us a thumbs up, subscribe. Make sure you're part of this. I mean, this site is on fire right now, and it's because of you guys. And I appreciate all the great comments. Even the LSU guy gave us $5 to just say, hey to him. Thanks, James. And really thank all of you guys for hanging out with us, talking college football, doing it live every Monday at 6 o'clock. So for Tony and Trey, I'm Mick. Thanks for watching, guys. We'll do it again next week. Stay tuned to the site for more, including Andrew Bone's show on recruiting coming up tomorrow. Roll Tide, everybody.